The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We switch gears to President of the Friends and Fishermen of the Sea, Mr. Gary Aboud, who is the president, as we deal with livestock, of course, fishermen, agriculture, and the budget that's expected based on the internal rumblings that could come on the first Monday in October. We say good morning to you, Gary. Good morning.
Good morning. Is that David Murray?
It is David Murray. I do apologize for my camera this morning, but we're operating from Studio 2, so we're still working out those little kinks. We'll get it sorted out by your next visit with us. So good morning to you, Mr. Aboud. As we continue with our discussion this morning on the Morning Rumble, we talk in budget wish lists. And given the current economic challenges and times we are facing in Trinidad and Tobago, we are no doubt poised to get another deficit budget. We are not sure, but based on what we are hearing and what's coming from the Ministry of Finance, well, we're certainly in the red still. Mr. Aboud, good morning to you. And if there was to be a wish list by you from this budget, what would it look like?
David, a couple of things. My name is Gary Aboud. I am the corporate secretary. I'm not the president. Terrence Beddoe is the president. He's a retired UN delegate. And Cecil McLean is the vice president and treasurer. We have been in existence for 28 years. And for the past 16 years, we always produced a budget wish list. So I'm glad you called on the matter, because it's very frightening that after 18 wish lists, we don't think a single accomplishment where a single minister or minister of finance has even considered what we have to say. So it's just like farting into the wind. But I'm happy to be here to share with your members. The first thing I want to say is that in all my life living in Trinidad, I've never experienced as much hate, racist hate, classist hate, an open condemnation from people who support one party or another. We as a group have always been apolitical. So what I have to say is properly researched and well thought out, and I'll say it as quickly as possible. The first thing is that Trinidad and Tobago has neglected our agricultural sector. It's called a Dutch disease, because there's easy money flowing from often corrupt extractive industries who pay a small percentage to our economy and a larger percentage to overseas offshore accounts of different negotiating parties, including ministers, including United Nations, World Bank, and IMF delegates. We, the people in Trinidad, get a minuscule percentage of the royalties of the value of the oil and gas. Now, that, as small as it is, has fueled our national subsidies and dependence on oil and gas until now, when it has run out. But because we have such a failed education system, spearheaded by a failed union entity called Tutor, which are a complete disgrace, producing tens of thousands of illiterate boys and girls every year that cannot read and write, cannot multiply, cannot speak proper English, cannot think clearly, many people go to agriculture and fishing. And so our membership on the sea, we estimate to be 52,000, which is the same estimated number as 25 years ago. It's not a sector that has grown because of gross mismanagement of the fisheries sector. So our recommendations are that Trinidad and Tobago are sitting on a precipice that we can fall off of. Devaluation is being discussed, and it will cause mass poverty, because the cost of everything which we import, which is 90% of our consumption, will escalate. So the objective of this discussion is to promote production here locally. So I have notes in front of me, and I'm going to go one by one as quickly as possible. The first thing is that fisheries and agriculture, if developed downstream, can create mass foreign exchange generation. That is if CARICOM does not kick us out. for inviting the KKK into our territory to bomb Venezuelans. If CARICOM does not expel us, as Mia Motley suggested, our production here can be exported for foreign exchange earnings in the first instance, but our farmers and fishers need incentives and training. So that's what I'm going to talk about. One of the incentives that I'm suggesting that is critically important that every government should have implemented long ago is to equalize the production disadvantage. I mean that you have large producers like Matuk's Ketchup. They bring in tomato paste duty-free. They bring in vinegar duty-free. They put it in a machine and they spin it and then they bottle it and they tell you locally made ketchup. Now, that is a disincentive to a tomato farmer who has to go through all the vagaries of mismanagement of the local economy, the crime, predial larceny, and to produce with all of the impacts of climate change, which our prime minister doesn't seem to be concerned about. And they must produce locally to compete with imported tomatoes that come from automated fields with aerial spraying in the United States, Canada, Russia, China. It's impossible. So I'm suggesting the following. All of the components that are used in the production process, bottles, labels, caps, if they're imported, they should be duty-free. If they're locally produced, they should be produced with some sort of negotiated subsidy to make these smaller industries more competitive. Secondly, I'm suggesting that the government initiate interest-free loans where the interest is subsidized to propel these small businesses. But the small businesses must prove themselves in terms of integrity and track record, production capacity, intelligence and training, and the product must be suitable for our market. Now, this applies to both fish that can be cleaned and orders could be created, pre-packaged, semi-cooked, semi-seasoned fish and fish products and agri products can be produced downstream. And herein is the opportunity for small businesses. Wines and liquor can be produced and are being produced without any government support. Modalife currently has a subsidy where if a person is a person of integrity and they go through a committee of three and are determined to have potential and to produce something that is good for the human body, that raw materials are grown here, at least 30% of the value of the product must be added locally to a product that is grown locally. Modalife will pay 30% of the equipment cost, and we do this up to 100,000. But we are swamped with applications. So we are saying that the governments that institutionalize such subsidies or other successful businesses, particularly those who are in the distribution businesses like Vemco and Handarnal and Ocado and Hadco, these big guys have the capacity much more than us with a small company, and they are distributing the products. So they are the ones that should be given some sort of, and I'm serious, a tax concession, because if I pay 30% tax and then I must give a subsidy to a small company of 30%, I must pay 30% tax on a 30% subsidy. So the subsidy actually costs our company 40%. So I'm saying that the government should recognize these programs, meet with us on it, get the corporate sector who have a goodwill, who are patriots and who want to invest in small businesses, and create incentives for the incentives. Fourthly.
Go ahead.
Fourthly, the bottles that are used in the packaging industry that are sold and produced by Carib, no bottle that Carib produces should be permitted to be imported. We should support Carib. We are distributors of bottles and we got involved in the whole bottle business as a mechanism to provide opportunity for small businesses that they could have a variation of bottle packaging that they could use because there are limited variety and volume of bottles that Carib produces. Nevertheless, we are the largest distributor of Carib bottles, which we do it as a subsidy for small business. But the bottles that we import, we have to pay duty and VAT on. And I'm saying that I don't think it's an unreasonable request, and I would be happy to partner if the government want to take over the bottle import and distribution business as a subsidy and to sell it at cost price as a subsidy. I would welcome and hand over all of our product knowledge, our inventories, because I believe that bottles and packaging are critical components in cost and novelty of the presentation of the product. Fifthly, we must have some sort of formal training program for these young businesses. The future of our economy is not by promoting millionaires, but by giving tools to young businesses to become millionaires. So all of those of us, I was poor when I was young. I worked 12-hour days. I still do 7 days a week. We have to teach people the art of hard work, the importance of sacrifice, the critical urgency and need of saving and of investment, of market analysis and projection. Many of our young people don't understand the intricacies of a balance sheet, the intricacies of cost-benefit analysis, of marketing and distribution, of production and production costs, and the nuances of economies of scale. These things take time, and time is what we don't have. So I'm saying that the government should partner with the private sector, pull together a committee immediately to come up with a program that is holistic and covers all of the areas of production, training in marketing, training in distribution, training in financial management and prudence, economies of scale, HR, and how to deal with people, because we have many laws to protect our workers and no laws to protect our employers. So we need to train employers how to protect themselves against the vagaries of poor industrial relations. The next thing is, on the sea, we had Devon Maraj in Kamala's last government, and he had proposed and done a lot of work to banning shrimp trawlers. Shrimp trawlers have been likened to dynamite fishing in terms of sustainability. If we stop the shrimp trawling, our fishery will multiply 15-fold. And I've seen it, and I'm speaking with authority, and I put my life on it. If we can stop the shrimp trawlers, I'm not saying to cripple them, but most of them don't operate. A few years ago, many of them were caught. They took out their hulls. They were buying gas at subsidized prices and selling it to Venezuelans. Yes, yes. And of the 27 type 1 and type 2 industrial shrimp trawlers, only 4 or 5 of them still operate, because the shrimp trawler itself has been destroyed by overfishing. So rather than we continue to scrape the ocean's beds and destroy the juvenile catch, which are simply need to be left alone. In 1 year, they'll be that big. Just leave them alone rather than catch them as you chase after shrimp and discard them as waste. That is really very important, because in the fishery, many of our men cannot catch fish and only fish when the fish are abundant. And so most of the year, they go to Venezuela and they get ground provisions, they get honey, they get wild meat, they bring sheep, goats, lamb, duck, turkey, they bring donkeys as well, and they sell donkeys to our farmers, piglets. So it is a reality, and this is one of the reasons why we are so completely terrorized by this murderous manner in which this prime minister, who we argue should go before the International Criminal Court for defying international law, in defying our local law and due process. If you suspect a person of a crime, then catch them doing the crime, interdict them, but to go and murder them. So our men now are even more at risk of being bombed out of the sea. And although I recognize that there are smugglers in our water, I do not buy into the paranoia and excuse being given to invade our sovereign sanctity, bring war and atomic warfare into. If a single atomic bomb is discharged, the radiation will destroy all our fish and all our agriculture. So we are playing She's saying fight fire with fire. We have to fight fire with peace, with diplomacy, because we have our people to take care of. And although the diplomats and the presidents and the prime ministers spend tens of millions of dollars a year in travel and in security entourage, and if there's radiation, they can fly out. 90% of our population cannot. So we must take care of home first, which is why we have suggested for the past 25 years, and the Pandey government listened to us and purchased radars. But within 2 years, just like every Coast Guard vessel, they become dysfunctional. So I'm saying that we should partner with the United States and with CARICOM members to have a radar system that can tell you when vessels are coming and when they are going. We should have Coast Guard vessels that work. We need to employ seamen to work in the Coast Guard, not big shots employing their nephews and nieces to get a walk in the Coast Guard, and they don't know the first thing about being a marine specialist. There are tens of thousands of bits of information to understanding a sea, how the sea works, how the vessel works, the currents, the dangers of the sea, of the wind, being able to interpret weather, to understand oncoming weather, when is a hurricane coming, what is a typhoon, what is a squall. Likewise in agriculture, it's not just anybody that can walk in and say, I want to be a farmer, I'm going to plant mango trees. You must have a lifelong commitment and understanding. And I'm saying that we, the leaders, should prepare programs to train those who feel they have a devotion and commitment to farming or to fishing. And then we should equip them and subsidize their equipment to get them. Then we should protect them with radars, not with retarded asinine nuclear submarines in our water. I don't want to go off on that. But the radars are critically important. And for decades, every single government comes into power, they don't buy the radars. 3 million US will get you state-of-the-art radars. The Coast Guard go out there and they're blind. They depend on us to call them and tell them when something illegal is going on. If we had radars, pretty larceny on our sea where people steal engines would stop, because we would catch them. You would see the vessel going to the other vessel and taking the other vessel out, and you would see it. This is 2026. This retarded manner of operating a country must stop. We have to move ahead to use artificial intelligence with all of the benefits that it has to protect our people, not to take away our people's jobs. Another thing is that we must ban monofilament nets. Those are the invisible, transparent nets that ghost fish. Thirdly, we must ban all small nets. The way the fish lives is when a fish is migrating, if it goes into a net, the net has to get around the gill. Then you would capture the fish. If the net is too small, the fish will bounce on the net. And just like a deer, it does not have the sense of direction to go around a blockade. It could just go left or go right and run down and get around the net. But fish don't have that ability. So when they get a small net, they knock it for half an hour and then they suffocate and die from exhaustion. When they go to the ocean bed, they consume all of the oxygen on the bed as they decompose. And as they decompose and consume the oxygen, every microorganism, every small fish, crab, crustacean, everything dies. So it has become a sea of death. Ninth, we need to examine and understand and report on and come up with mechanisms to clean our water. There's a correlation between the consumption of bottom-dwelling fish in the Gulf of Paria and cancer. Dr. Aaron Balgobin produced a document 18 years ago. The professor who did it for him, who guided him, was sent on early retirement. She was abandoned. And we, the taxpayer, had to pay her salary for 10 years because Manning sent her packing, because it showed that the oil and gas sector are negligent, delinquent, contaminating our fish and killing our people. I can't wait for somebody with cancer to bring a legal action against the government because they consume fish and they got cancer. There's studies that show a correlation between eating scaled fish from the Gulf of Paria. They don't migrate, they live here. But the bluefish, the ones that have no scale, they don't live here. But even with the bluefish on the East Coast, we found mercury at 22 times beyond the World Health Organization's limit. And EOG admitted to us that when they drill, they discharge all the drilling liquids, which is heavily contaminated with mercury. So that mercury, those heavy metal contaminants, are killing our fish, poisoning our fish, and poisoning us. Now, tell me about 2025. We can't pull our act together. Now, I am not into this thing about supporting one and hating another. People keep saying that I'm a PNM, but people don't know their head from their derriere, because we fought the PNM for 10 years, tooth and nail. And we never had the kind of hateful, demonic, racist, classist attacks against us personally and business-wise that we are having now in the past 100 days of this UNC government. It must stop. Yesterday, I defended one of the ministers because people are saying the worst things about him, that he's a homosexual, are saying the worst things about Kamala. I defend all of our politicians because they are our leaders. Leave them alone. Give them the support. Give them advice. Give them information and data.
You know, I have a question to ask you. You mentioned about the Nets. I want to ask you two questions. Why did you mention the KKK with us in Trinidad? What was that about? I mean, I felt it was not necessary. One, and two, in the absence of these Nets, what else can be used?
Well,
you know, but I want to address the KKK issue, because I felt that...
KKK, I grew up with the KKK.
Yeah, but how does that...
I grew up with the KKK. Wait, I lived in Washington, just north of the Virginia. I lived where I had black friends, and all my white friends refused to talk to me, and I got evicted. Now, in the United States, every KKK member is driving around with a big flag, a big beard, and cursing everybody if you dare question Donald Trump. They are big supporters of his government. Now, instead of him coming and blowing up our people, shouldn't he be cleaning up his nation? That's my point.
But what you mean blowing up our people? I'm trying to understand what you mean, our people. Because as far as we understand, the U.S. Presence in the Caribbean Sea is to attack narco trafficking, arrest the human trafficking, and all these things.
There's no proof of a single one of those vessels having any narcotics on it.
Well, we have countries saying that cocaine is washing up ashore. So, I mean...
I have not read that. You show me that as evidence. and even if that is evidence, then that is the strongest reason to follow due process. We are a country with law and order. Are we saying that our police should go onto a drug block and throw a hand grenade and blow up everybody?
But this is not our country arresting this situation with the narco trafficking and human trafficking.
You're not well informed. 88% of the narco trafficking takes place through Central America.
But what I'm saying to you, Mr. Abood, I'm only interjecting because my time running out and I need to get these questions out. When you look at the U.S. presence in the Caribbean Sea, they're not even in our waters. They're in the
Caribbean waters.
Where you have evidence of that, Mr. Abood? I don't have any.
They are in our territory.
Where? They're in the region, but they're not in Trinidad and Tobago waters. They're not even, as far as I understand, they're not even Venezuela's waters.
They are in our waters.
Where?
I have first-hand information from longline fishermen who are out at sea of seeing the vessels. In any event, seven military bases in Colombia are partnering with United States military for full access. So United States military have access to equipment, personnel, training, and a presence in Colombia. If it were that so much narco trafficking is occurring, why can't they intercept it in Colombia? And if 88% of the crack cocaine that is being produced is heading west up through Central America, then why don't they make partnerships to intercept that? And if it is that it's being imported into America, as the Colombian president has said, why doesn't he put death notices and million-dollar rewards,
you know,
for disruptors in the United States.
Well, maybe there's a lot of rhetoric out there in terms of why the U.S. presence is in the Caribbean Sea, is in the region, right? We understand Venezuela's natural reserve, and maybe there's talks that even from before, the U.S. government did not recognize the Maduro regime as a legitimate political government governing Venezuela. We understand all of that, but how does that affect us home with our budget wish list in terms of the fisheries, agriculture, the marine life? I mean, you are well prepared for this interview, I must say, but we kind of digress a bit.
There's no future for fisheries if we have nuclear submarines in our water. If an accident occurs, like it occurred in the First World War, where a whole war was started based on an accident.
But that is beyond us. Even if our government decides to intervene and say, tell you, you think our government could tell the U.S. to pack up and go home? Are they affecting us?
Absolutely. They are only here because of our consent. There's international law.
Which our consent you're talking about?
This government granted consent to the United States government to occupy our territorial waters, to address the issue of narco-terrorism. It's a convenient term, but it's not real. It's not real. The drug smugglers are drug smugglers. Where did he come up with this idea?
But how does that deal with our budget wish list, Mr. Aboud?
Because there's no country if there is war. Trinidad will not exist if a war exists.
We agree. I agree.
After Donald Trump voted out or leaves, we have to live with our Venezuelan brothers for the next 1,000 years. Why are we creating hate and animosity and killing them without judicial process?
But we are not killing them.
We have killed them.
No, sir.
If I bring a security into my company and I say, kill anybody you suspect,
no, sir.
And they kill them.
Unfortunately, I would love to carry this with you, but I want to respectfully disagree with you this morning, because at the end of the day, whether we as a Trinidad and Tobago government had accepted the U.S. presence or not, if we had told Donald Trump, we do not accept your presence here, we would be seen as enemies to the U.S. because we would now be taking sides. They would not recognize neutrality. What would have been better for our government was to stay silent on the issue. Let them, they're not in our waters, they're not in our country. We have invited them here for training. We have gotten support from the U.S. And this morning, I mean, while you were well prepared, I am so sorry that we're out of time. I wanted to get more from you on the budgeting aspect, as to what you think our deficit budget that is projected for the next coming weeks that we will get, how was that going to affect the fisheries? But you know what?
In terms of budget allocation,
yes,
we should have budget allocations for drone surveillance to protect our farmers. We should have legislative amendments to increase the penalties for predial larceny to life imprisonment or hard labor for 20 years. All of the penalties for stealing boats should be increased 100-fold.
All right.
If we're going to have law and order, unless we have judicial process, in terms of...
Well, Mr. Aboud, I must pause here for now because our news is on the heels and I have some commitments. I want to thank you, and I think a part two is necessary. All right, so look out for a call from our producers as we seek to bring you back for a part two, because I think we missed some crucial information that you have that we should talk about. So thank you again. I have to leave it here, but we will revisit it again, Mr. Aboud. It's always a pleasure chatting with you. Have a great day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.